Public Safety Finance Division will come to order. We don't have a quorum quite yet, but for the people who are on time, we should start. And if people could turn off, make sure I don't have my cell phone, turn off their cell phones.
What's yours?
Before I say something, I have to make sure. We're getting some feedback from those devices. So we have now the governor's 2010 supplemental budget recommendations. So that's going to be the first part of the agenda today. And then we will begin with the Department of Corrections budget as proposed and recommended by the governor. And they can take as long as they like. We've also scheduled Tuesday also for the Department of Corrections, so we can go into some of the departments within that agency in more detail. So we still don't have a quorum? Okay. All right. So, Mr. Carger, why don't you, you should have in your packet a copy of the budget recommendations and a spreadsheet for our division. So, Mr. Carger, if you'd like to walk us through, and if you have questions as we're going through it, feel free to jump in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members will be going through the spreadsheet, but I just want to say a few things before we begin this. Once again, there is a $1.2 billion deficit that the state is dealing with. This probably, or this may change to a small extent on March, because we're going to get the new February forecast. I think they said they were going to be releasing that February or March 2nd. And the spreadsheet now, it's the basic spreadsheet that you're all used to looking at. And what we included in this one, we included the cuts that the agencies will be receiving. And the spreadsheet is set up by the agency and the program, but it also includes any programs or agencies that did not receive a reduction. And let me just start out this with saying what the governor was recommending is that the majority of the agencies under this committee, they have a 3% reduction of the unspent balance in operating funds for fiscal year 10, and then another 3% reduction in fiscal year 11 and the next biennium. So you'll see that the fiscal year 10 funds, usually the reduction will be a little less than 11 because we are already halfway into the fiscal year. And also that the governor is recommending that contracts, or, you know, mainly contracts, that there be a 6% reduction in on unspent balances in fiscal year 10 and a 6% in 11 and with tails. So with that, I will start off with
Mr. Carger. Can I just ask a question about that before you go on? What constitutes a contract? I mean, I'm thinking of legal aid, I believe, would be considered a contract, and the public defense is considered. How is that a contract when they're considered part of the, I've always thought of them as part of the court system. I think the court system thinks them that way.
Mr. Chair, I think you are right. That is the way they, I think it was set up, was the accounting system. Is they are set up in the accounting system as contracts, and you are correct that we have two of those agencies, Civil Legal and the Public Defense Corporations, that will see a 6% reduction. The operating, there's object codes in the accounting system. Operating expenses are two of the object codes. They include salaries, you know, your pencils and paper, travel, rent, and then the others is contracts. And since the money for those agencies goes through the state, goes through the Supreme Court or the public defenders or Board of Public Defense, then it's transferred to these other groups. So that's why they are considered contracts. Does that make any sense?
Not to me, but maybe I'll catch on later. Okay. So continue, please.
So basically, we have here the Supreme Court. You can see that the Supreme Court operations, there's a reduction for the biennium of a little over $1.4 million. That's the 3% reduction when we're talking about the Civil Legal Services. Once again, that's the contract where the governor is recommending a 6% decrease in their budget, and the decrease results into a little over $1 million for the biennium. Court of Appeals, 3%, that's $468,000 for the biennium. Governor recommends the district courts now he overall reduction of $11.229 million. But he also has a recommendation, and he's I think he has, or he will be working on a bill for it's the DWI bill. And in that bill, he will transfer the implied consent hearings from the district courts to the Office of Administrative Hearings. He's showing here a decrease that there will be a cost savings of that of $516,000 the first year to the courts and a little over $1 million in 12 and another $1 million in 13. However, he is still considering all this reduction falls into their 3% that he's recommending for other agencies. They are, in state government, the Office of Hearing Examiners or the Office of Administrative Hearings will see an increase to their budget of, I think it's $487,000 in 11 and then $632,000. Supposedly, the governor is saying that this will result in a savings of close to $400,000 annually. Next item on line 34 is the tax court. Here the reduction is $37,000 for the biennium. Uniform Laws Commission, $2,000. Board on Judicial Standards, $24,000. Public Defense Board, now here the operating reduction, once again 3% for them. It's $2.376 million for the biennium. However, they do have the grant reduction. That's to their four public defense corporations, and that reduction is a 6% and results in a $913,000 reduction. Now, public safety is on the next page. We have Homeland Security is the first item, and here we have an increase in funding on line 64. This is for disaster relief. It picks up the state and the local share, and it's at $1.6 million in fiscal year 11. Basically, talking to public safety, this is for the 09 spring floods in the Red River Valley. And if I don't know if any of you were on the bonding committee, but they did have a bonding request, I believe it was last year, for $3.9 million. And this was found that they could not bond for it. So they need the $1.6 million. The next item is the BCA. Here you will see another increase. We have two increases in this budget, both in public safety. And this is for the computer infrastructure. It's basically it's a technical upgrade and conversion of documents to a digital format. When I talked to the agency, they said this would make the state, I think, more in compliance with the Adam Walsh Act. And it's a $200,000 one-time increase. Next, you'll notice that the fire marshal has a fire safety account transfer to the general fund, which we will go into later.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Oh,
Mr. Chair.
Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carter, you mentioned the $200,000 item is a one-time increase. Will that then come out of the base as we go forward, or is that going to get built into the base?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, it will be, it's just one time. It will not be built into the base.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The fire marshal, like I said, there's a transfer, and we'll cover the transfer to the general fund later at the end of the spreadsheet. You'll see alcohol and gambling and alcohol enforcement. There is no decrease or increase. Office of Justice programs the same, and the same with our 911 emergency armor program. So the total in public safety, you'll see an increase of $1.8 million. And that both of those are one time. Post board on the bottom of the page 105, there is the governor recommends no increase or decrease to that agency. On page 3, we have the private detective board. The reduction, governor is recommending a reduction of $5,000 in this current biennium. Human rights, two items here. The overall reduction is a reduction of $162,000 for the current biennium. With TAILS, the TAILS go into $206,000 for 12 and 13. But also the governor unallotted certain agencies. We had one unallotment agencies that this committee is responsible for, and that was the human rights. So I think it was July when the governor unallotted $79,000. The governor is recommending the continuation of that unallotment. So you'll see that on the under the fiscal year 12 and 13 columns, the $79,000 each year, for a total of $158,000 in the next biennium, what we would call TAILS. Corrections is the next agency. Here, the first program in corrections is institutions. And the first item on line 126 is a reduction in offender education. I think what we were talking to one of the commissioners, and they were saying that this might, I think they're still working on it, but centralized supervision of juvenile education and maybe a decrease in adult education and a decrease in law library hours. The next item on line 127 is an operating budget reduction. We put it under institutions for now, but it will be agency-wide, and that will total to a little over $1.6 million for the 10 and 11 biennium, the current biennium, and then we'll go up to a little over $2 million for the next biennium. The next program is community services, and the first item there is on line 135. That is the elimination of the state sentencing to serve subsidy. Right now, sentencing to serve, I believe, is in 87, or they have 87 crews out there, 54 are state-run and 33 are county-run. And that will result in a decrease for this biennium of a little over, close to $4.6 million with TAILS will be ongoing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if there were 87 sentenced to serve prior, do we know how many there will be with this cut?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, no, we do not. The counties could possibly pick up some of the costs on this program. It's a 50% match, I should have pointed out. I think the counties pay 50%, the state pays 50%, and I could be corrected if I'm wrong on that.
Okay.
Please go on.
The next item on line 136 is community services reductions. This is for $240,000 for this biennium, and basically it's funding for, according to the budget, the supplemental budget narrative, it's funding decrease in funding for reentry and the elimination of maybe a full-time equivalent. Operational support, once again, they might be under that overall reduction, but we left the spreadsheet blank on that. Sentencing guidelines is the last agency that we have, and they will take a $29,000 reduction under the governor's recommendation. Then we'll have the revenue adjustments. These are revenues that are in other accounts that will be transferred to the general fund. Basically, the first one is line 160. It's a general fund transfer from MNCOR. This is the revolving MNCOR fund, and that's for $1.563 million for the biennium. This is a one-time a transfer.
And Mr. Kerger, so what does, I mean, we could ask the department, but just so we know, this is profit that is made by MNCOR that goes into this fund and expands the businesses?
Mr. Chair, you're correct.
And so the reduction would do what then?
Well, I guess, you know, they will maybe not be able to buy equipment or, there possibly could be some layoffs there too, I think they said in the narrative, and they will be up here, I think, shortly on that one. Next item is line 161. This is a transfer in corrections from their special revenue funds to the general fund, which will result in $603,000, one time going to the general fund. Then the last transfer that we have is on line 162, is a general fund transfer in from the fire safety account. And this is $6.9 million the first year and $3 million the second year for a total of $9.9 million. That will be transferred into the general fund.
And I suppose we can come to that at a later time, too. I mean, I don't blame the administration for doing this, what I think a lot of us were. What would this actually do in relative to fire safety training? Will they have any money to?
They have, Mr. Chair, they already have an appropriation, and this is just extra, or it's, I guess what the governor said, it's surplus money coming in. They're coming in over estimates. So the governor is using that money. It will still leave them, according to their estimates, I believe about a $1 million a year funding that will just be sitting in that fund. I think there is a bill out there right now to that will be heard in, or was referred to this committee on, you know, maybe appropriating some of that money.
So let me just make sure I understand. So they'll even with the transfer to the general fund, there'll still be $1 million in the account. Is that on top of their current training needs?
Yep, Mr. Chair, that is on top of what the legislature appropriated to them.
Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only thing I would say is with the LGA cuts that have occurred, the I know a lot of our volunteer paid-on-call firefighters have had a cut in their training, and the intended use of this money is for their training. And I think if you look at some of the other cuts that have occurred, I don't really think this is a wise idea to cut the firefighter training dollars, but that's just my opinion, and we'll have time to debate that as we proceed.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple questions from Mr. Carter. In your description of that line item, you made a comment, quote, money coming in over estimate. Explain that. I don't understand that phrase.
Mr. Carter.
Well, I think, they estimated the, and we can get more information from public safety on this, but it's bringing in, right now, there is a surplus in that account of, I think, $4.4 million. So, and then if you carry that forward, I think it's, you know, it goes on to, you know, in, you know, 11, 12, and 13. So, in other words, it's, we already have appropriated for the, out of that account, what we appropriate for is we have to make up a general fund deficit because, remember, this is the surcharge on insurance premiums, 0.65%. Before it was 0.5% that was strictly going to the general fund. When we did this, we had to make up that deficit. We fund the fire marshal out of it, and then we fund the training for the firefighters. So once again, it was currently, according to Mr. Ahrens, when we met with him, there's a $4.4 million amount sitting in that fund that is not, you know, there's no, there has been no appropriation made for it. It is sitting there.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I won't take any more time. I suspect there may be questions later. But on that particular note, the $4.4 million sitting in the account to which there's been no appropriation, are you aware if there's been requests for appropriation?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, I know we have talked to some of the members of the fire board, and they do they will be, you know, they have some requests, and I think there is, like I said, there is a bill out there, you know, and there is, they say there is a need for that. I mean,
well, again, Mr. Chairman, I think we can get into this in more detail later, but I think I just would suggest that making the suggestion that there's a $4.4 million surplus, I think, is an erroneous statement. There have been requests. They have not been met. So I would not necessarily term that a surplus. Last question I do have at this time, however, is you also referenced a legislative appropriation, that this account is on top of a legislative appropriation. What is that legislative appropriation?
Mr. Carter.
You know, Mr. Chair, I will have to check my spreadsheet, but I can get that as soon as I finish, if you would like, what their appropriation is.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For now, thanks.
And we will be hearing from the fire marshal and about these accounts on Thursday, so we can go into that in much more detail.
And then, Mr. Chair, and just to refer to that, when I said the term fire safety account surplus, that is the terminology that is used in the governor's supplemental budget recommendations. It's on page 33. If
Mr. Chairman, my response will be, okay, fine.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Mr. Carter has the answer right now, but it would be helpful to know how much money a 65-cent surcharge on homeowner and commercial insurance policies actually raises as a whole. I mean, we see what the surplus is here. But you know, I'm just being creative in my revenue source ideas, and so it would be nice to know how much 63 cents, your 65 cents raises in general.
We could probably get that information.
Thank you.
You know, just a commentary here on this, and, you know, as someone who's searching for every penny to try to fix our budget, this is the fruit that's there, and we all see it, and I think we all want to sort of pull at it. And I know Representative Smith has a bill, and I think there's legitimate uses for it. And I think this is where the public gets sort of cynical with us when we create these funds and we say, we're going to put a little tax on this, on your insurance policy or on your phone bill or whatever it might be, and then we run into a situation like this where we're in a deficit and we use it. And we're in between a rock and a hard place, but I think the public doesn't trust us then when we say we want to have an increase in this tax or that tax and then don't use it for those purposes. Mr. Carker. Yes.
Then, Mr. Chair, that is the spreadsheet, but I want to mention one other item that is in the governor's budget that could have an effect on all of our agencies. That is under the Minnesota Management and Budget, under their supplemental budget, there is a $9 million unallocated cut under their budget. Once again, that reduces state agency operating budgets beyond the reductions made in other proposals. To the extent possible, they want to do this through consolidating IT and possibly rent savings, but it is out there, and I think the document says if that doesn't work, the remainder will be allocated to agencies. So we're still trying to get some more information on that, but...
I don't understand. Would you just say that again or
yes.
Explain it again?
The under the Minnesota Management Budget, they have a reduction of $9 million that they are to take from agencies, you know, from basically the executive branch agencies. And they will try to do this through efficiencies, you know, consolidating IT, maybe some rent savings or other shared services. If they're unable to do that, the governor is recommending that they can go in and from the agencies to the extent that they reach that $5 million reduction.
Okay, very good.
Then the last thing that I want to point out, Mr. Chair, is that sentencing guidelines, if they have their proposed rankings, I don't think we included this in the any handouts, but they have two provisions that will increase the beds for corrections. And if the legislature does nothing, those will go into effect. I think this was discussed in Representative Hillstrom's committee. But we now have the fiscal impact of those. And basically the first one is for prostitution, sex trafficking. They're increasing some of the severity levels. This will result in an increase in beds. And for this biennium, you know, it... the corrections are saying it will cost $129,000. They also have riot in the first degree. They're making this a felony now. This will result in a small one bed in 12 and one bed in 2013. So when you total these up in this biennium, the corrections impact will be $129,000. For the next biennium in 12 and 13, the impact will be $637,000.
And Mr. Carter, I just wanted to say that I asked you to bring that up, and I want to apologize to the committee. It was not my intent when I authored that trafficking bill that increased the sentences for repeat offenders who are trafficking, the behavior is abominable, and these people should be put in prison, and they should be put in prison for longer periods of time, and I support that. But it was not my intent to have a bed impact this early when we were in the middle of a recession, and we were told at the time that the bed impact would not take place until 2014, and that's why I authored the bill as I did. And the Sentencing Guidelines Commission chose, with the support of some advocates for the program, to act unilaterally, and hence we have that bed impact. That's not been my desire to have bills in front of this body that increase beds at the Department of Corrections when we can't afford it, regardless of how we might think it's good public policy. If some calls, you have a question. You also have a shiner.
Mr. Chair, I wasn't on the floor on Monday for the debt bill because some of your members got to me, but I was pleased to see that despite my absence, my colleagues on the GOP side were able to put up a good effort nonetheless. Mr. Chair, thank you for noticing. It's kind of hard not to. Mr. Chair, with regard to your last point, I'm glad you raise it. I think you know my feeling about putting violent offenders away, and I don't think we do enough of it here in Minnesota. That said, I do think that as we move forward and try to deal with the budget challenges that we have, that we do need to take a look at how we have funded the Department of Corrections and other agencies within this committee's jurisdiction in the past, and specifically I would refer you and the committee's consideration to the bill that we passed several years ago, I believe in response to the Drew Shedin incident, and the fiscal note that accompanied that legislation included a significant bed impact, and we heard in Chair Hailstrom's committee that despite the best estimates at the time, and I believe they absolutely were appropriate estimates at the time, we haven't seen individuals incarcerated in our prison system at anywhere near the rate that was estimated in that fiscal note. And I'm not sure what got built into any agency's base as a result of that or any other legislation that we may have passed over the last several years, but it causes a great concern to me. That fiscal note had a huge price tag to it, mm-hmm. and I believe that it's probably buried now somewhere in the base. That's until I'm shown otherwise. That's my assumption, and I hope I'm wrong. But if in fact we have paid for all kinds of beds that really aren't being used, well, then I think we've got some ability to absorb some of those costs, and we need to find it. So I'm sympathetic to the plight that you have in trying to figure out how we're going to wrestle with the immediate budget challenges, but I'm also concerned, and I've started to have conversations with members of the Legislative Advisory Commission, or the ones that recommend to the legislative auditor what we ought to do, because I think that's something that's probably not just at issue here in our committee, but it probably runs across the agencies. When we as a legislature appropriate money and make decisions based on what the agency's best estimates are at the time, and then that doesn't prove to be the case, what happens to those dollars, and how does that flow through? So I don't know what the answer is. I just raised the issue. I think that I would hope we can find a way to ratify through not negating what the Sentencing Guidelines Commission did, because I think they did the right thing. I'm just not sure how we're going to pay for it. Given what we did in that one example, I'm not sure that we need to find a way to pay for it, because I think the money's there.
Carker, do you have any? I won't put you on the spot, but I mean, that does raise a good point. I mean, we rely on these fiscal notes, and if they're that grossly inaccurate, I mean, how are we supposed to? And do you have any ideas how we might look at this differently, or maybe we just need to have the Sentencing Guidelines Commission come in? I mean, obviously, Ms. Cornelius, do you have something you want to say to this?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
At the risk of irritating Representative Coles, I'd like to restate his question in a little more simple English. If 5 years ago we passed a law putting people away without parole for certain crimes, and I'm pulling a number out of thin air, if we had to buy 50 bed spaces at that time, and in fact now we've only had 8 people put away since then, can we get our money back?
Ms. Cornelius, do you have, because obviously the department is a major part of helping determine that fiscal note. So go ahead.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Lisa Cornelius. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Corrections. Representative Coles, I think that's a very good question. When we do fiscal notes as it relates to bed impact, we only get money in our base budget if it happens during that current biennium. In out years, it's built in the tails. However, each biennial budget cycle, we do what they call a base adjustment forecast. And what we do is we look at our population projections, so we look at all current laws and determine what we believe based on history, even with the new laws, what our population increase or decrease might be over time. We then use our marginal per diem, which we've had a lot of discussion about, to determine what our base adjustment will be in the next biennium. So we do not get money. So let's say we estimated 50 beds in 2014. We do not get base money for that. We only get base money for that current biennium, and then from there, that base adjustment forecast from the population forecast and the marginal per diem determines how much gets in our base budget.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Cornelius, that's helpful. Thank you for that information. I'm still not sure that it completely satisfies at least my curiosity over how. So we don't need the answer now. We should have this discussion going forward. But the question then becomes, okay, so how much did the department calculate as its base adjustment, and is it consistent with what we've seen for people being incarcerated for using, continue to use this example, individuals sentenced to life without parole for first-degree criminal sexual conduct? Again, we don't have to have that discussion now. I appreciate the additional information. I still do have some questions, though, and I think this is something we need to think about.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the next question would be then, if we had to allocate that as part of your budget, then if they didn't get the money, where did the money go? I mean,
are you asking Ms. Cornelius?
Well, I don't know if she can answer it, but maybe that's a good question for the committee to ask, you know, or have Mr. Carter look into, because ultimately if you had to budget it on the spreadsheet, we passed the bill, we allocated the money, and they didn't get it. Who did? Where'd it go?
Well, I'm assuming you get it, Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, if it's during that budget cycle, that current budget cycle, yes, we did get the money. If it's in the out years, that base adjustment is recalculated the next biennial budget cycle. So perhaps, for instance, if we didn't get as many offenders, there would be a decrease in that base adjustment. Now, we only budget out 4 years, so anything beyond that will be taken care of in the next biennial. I mean, that base adjustment shifts every single biennium.
So is that, so is part of the problem here, and Representative Smith, maybe you can help me out with this. I mean, part of the problem here is that, I mean, we're making certain assumptions about what judges are ultimately going to sentence. So if there's a plea agreement where ostensibly you were going to get 25 years and you get 8 or 10, I mean, obviously that's going to have a dramatic impact on your budget ongoing. Is that, am I accurate there?
Mm-hmm.
Is this part of the problem? In terms of assessing, because, I mean, we're assuming that someone's getting 25 years or life without parole, that they're doing that time, and frankly, they're not, and that's up to the judiciary by and large. So is this obviously is complicating your assessment of what the costs are going to be to the DOC.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. That does make it more complicated. We do work very closely with sentencing guidelines and Minnesota management and budget when we do all of these base adjustments. So we do have lots of agencies involved in it. And we are very accurate, I believe, with our projections. Our accuracy rate is, or I should say our inaccuracy rate is like less than 1%. So we have done historically a very good job at estimating what our projections are.
Okay, Representative Eastland and Liebling.
This was exactly my question, and I guess I was contemplating, is there a way that we could actually do some kind of a circling back here, and so we could look at fiscal notes, which we make our decisions on, and then go back and see what the assumptions that we had and how accurate they were and what the bed impact actually was. I mean, if we went back 5 years and picked out every piece of legislation that had bed impact, there's a number that we should be seeing happening in our corrections. Is that the number that we're seeing? I guess it would be interesting to kind of try to understand that process and it give us a little better idea of how confident we can be in the projections that we're getting from revenue.
Is there any way to do that? Mr. Chair? I don't know if it's exactly like that, but is there a way to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, there is, I think, a way to do some of that. I think we can look at that. In fact, we have done a little work on some of that already. For example, I think it was the strangulation, that was passed for domestic abuse, and we did find some differences, even what the courts were estimating, what their numbers were, and what the public defense numbers were. In fact, I even have that on my computer. I can run up if you want one example and bring it down.
That's a good idea. We should be looking at that, Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to kind of raise something along the same lines. It's making me think about something that was passed, I think, last session in economic development. Kim Norton had a bill that was enacted to have follow-up on programs that are put into place by deed, that, you have claims this program, that program is going to create this result, and then there's never a follow-up. And so she put something in place to get that follow-up report. And I was going to say, I don't think we have a systematic follow-up to say, what we passed last session or the session before, what was the result in terms of bed impact or reduction in crime or any other thing. And I was going to ask Mr. Carger to correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we do systematically follow up, and perhaps that's something that we ought to put in law and have a report every single year so that we can actually see how accurate the predictions are.
Mr. Carger, is that feasible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, I think it would be feasible in certain cases. We just had there was a subcommittee on fiscal notes, and I handed out an article by Governing Magazine where they talked about the state of Arizona, where they did something and they were off by millions and millions of dollars. And they also recommended in there that there should be some performance indicators for fiscal notes, that we maybe go back and look at how accurate they really are. But I know of no state that is currently doing that either. And once again, what we tell representatives here is that the fiscal note is simply advice to the legislature. And, if you have other assumptions or other ideas, you can challenge those fiscal notes.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so the question was cleared up about the out years and the tails, that who's ever writing the fiscal note doesn't get a benefit based on those. But how about the current biennium? If there's a gross disparity in the current biennium, can we get a rebate for that? And also, if in fact there is a consistently inaccurate level of estimation, can we get some kind of a credit report for agencies where if they're consistently submitting bad fiscal notes, they got a bad credit rating and they get less money? I think that'd be a great idea, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I want to make it clear. I've raised one example here, and I don't want anybody to think that I'm suggesting that the Department of Corrections has routinely provided us with bad fiscal notes. I think in this one instance, and it's not just the Department of Corrections, it was public safety and the courts and everybody else that I at least have some questions about, but I want to make it clear that I'm not casting aspersions generally upon the agencies, Representative Lesh. We can all improve, but I don't know, because I haven't looked at, as Representative Liebling was suggesting, some kind of historical record of how many times this happened. This is one instance that I'm aware of.
As a follow-up, Mr. Chair, I am certainly not casting aspersions specifically in this instance. I am casting aspersions generally, though. Representative Coles, because I've run into some bad
things. Welcome back, Representative Lash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Carger indicated that members are always told that fiscal notes are advisory. And so, Mr. Chair, if that is going to be your perspective in the future, that would be great for us to know that we can challenge what those fiscal notes might be when it comes to putting together your budget. That would be helpful because some of us might like to add additional beds or something, and we'd like to know if we can convince you by saying the fiscal note is advisory.
Okay, we'll have more discussion. Okay, we need a motion to approve. There's one minor typographical error on the minutes. We spelled Dennis Benson's name wrong, but I'd like a motion to approve the minutes as will be corrected by the committee legislative assistant for Thursday, February 11th. Can I get a motion? Representative Olin moved. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed. That motion prevails. Okay. Anything else before we'll have the Department of Corrections come up? We have at least three people that we know will be presenting today. The commissioner is here. I don't know if you wanted to make any opening statements, Commissioner Fabian, or just okay. Well, thank you for coming. And Ms. Cornelius, are you starting, or are you? And let me just before the assistant and deputy commissioner present, keep in mind that this the governor's budget recommendations are just that, and it even says on the document they are recommendations. It will be up to this committee over the course of time to examine his recommendations, and we will ultimately come up with the budget. And depending on what kind of number we get, may mean more cuts or less cuts, and we don't have an idea about that at this particular point. But I did want to bring that to your attention. There are some things that the governor is recommending that I think are just fine, and part of me thinks that more agencies should be sharing more in the pain if we're going to go forward. But that's my opinion at this particular point. Representative Coles.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have to have this discussion right now, but I do think we should have the discussion in committee, if not at the end of committee today, the next time we meet. And I guess I'm curious as to what you have heard from your leadership about when you will have a target in terms of what this committee needs to meet. You're absolutely right. These are recommendations from the governor, and we, the legislature, get to appropriate and get to. We have to make decisions. It's our responsibility. And so I'm curious what you've heard from your leadership, what kind of timing we're going to have, when we're going to have a target, so that we can get to the work that I think we need to do. We need to give the governor's recommendations, I think, due consideration. I think many of them are, as you suggest, appropriate. And I think we've heard bipartisanly there's some questions about some of the others. But we're going to have a number that we have to hit. And I'm just curious what the DFL leadership's plan is for getting us down that path. Last year we spent a lot of time talking about the governor's recommendations, and then all of a sudden at the end of session, very quickly put together the legislative proposal. So I'm curious what the timing is. We don't have to have the discussion right now if you're not prepared to, but I think in the next day or two, in the next meeting or two, we should have it. We should have it publicly so that the agencies and the public is aware of what the plan is.
Representative Coles, I'm not prepared at this point because a decision has not been made, and as soon as it is, I will let you know and let the committee know. As the lead minority member, we're having discussions about that now, how to proceed with this, and we've got a big hole to dig out of, and we will do it. But as soon as I know, I will let the committee know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess my closing comment then on this would be that, you know, I do want to hear from the agencies. I want to discuss the governor's recommendations. I think that's absolutely appropriate for us to do. But if we spend, you know, the next month doing that and kind of picking at the governor's recommendations and we're not coming forward with our own ideas, I'm going to be making a lot of noise about this issue. Just a fair warning to you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
That's fair. Very good. Thank you. Ms. Cornelius, begin, please. Well, whoever is going to start.
Mr. Chair, I actually would like to start by answering Representative Lesh's question. If we do have a shift in the current biennium on population projections, yes, money does get taken out of our budget. In fact, it happened last biennium in the tune of about $3 million. So it does happen.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. A follow-up. Who takes the money, and where does it go?
Ms. Cornelius.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom. Minnesota Management and Budget takes the money, and they reallocate it throughout the state, I would imagine. I mean, that might be a better question specifically for them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be helpful to know where our public safety dollars got reallocated to if we funded the Department of Corrections and someone else took the money. It might be nice to know where it ended up.
Mr. King, do you have an answer to that? Maybe this question has resolved our problem, Representative Hillstrom.
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Maybe not, though. Mr. King, could you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Jim King, Executive Budget Officer with the Department of Finance. The question of what happens with the money, it basically goes to the bottom line. If there's a budget reduction, it goes to the bottom line. If it's in the forecast, we do a forecast every year for corrections, and it changes the out-year numbers. And in fact, in the next biennium, I don't have the numbers right in front of me. The population is pretty much leveled off, so we have decreased the estimate for the out years. We did that. We did that in November, and that money basically falls to the bottom line. So if we had the former numbers that were going up a bit, there would have been basically a greater deficit projected than there is now. So any change in the department's budget, either up or down, affects the bottom line for the general fund.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make it real clear. So when the $3 million got taken from the department, it got canceled, and it just went in the general fund, and then what other area was short, it went to pay for those. Is that correct?
Mr. King.
Yes. I think their appropriation was reduced, and that basically that goes to the general fund. As in any other agency's budget, it gets reduced at all. That's funded out of the general fund. It goes to the bottom line.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if we could find out in the past 5 years, 8 years, or whatever, how many times there's been canceling and how much, so that we can find out, Mr. Chair, how much money we allocated out of public safety that then got canceled out and got spent in other areas of the budget, that would be helpful to know.
Mr. King, can you provide that?
Mr. Chair, I'm not actually quite certain what your question is. I mean, we make some adjustments in the budget and the appropriated amounts for various changes in the budget. All agencies also generally have some level of cancellations at all time. It's almost impossible to spend every last dollar in a budget. So that's a normal process of our cancellations. We account for those after they occur.
I think what she's asking for is, could we get over a five-year period a dollar amount of what those cancellate? Is that what you were asking?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, especially in the Department of Corrections in particular, because that tends to be one of the largest sections. And if it gets an automatic resetting based on the number of prisoners that they get or don't get, it just would be nice to know how much that canceling was and over the last 5 years.
Is that possible, Mr. King?
Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, the cancellation may be more of a technical issue. Cancellation just happens. It relates to how much money is unspent of monies that are appropriated to the agency. We also make changes in the appropriations to the agency based on forecasts. It's kind of two separate things, and I can certainly track either or both of those if that's what you desire. Maybe you can talk with Mr. Carter to make sure we're speaking the same language on that.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, same question asked this way. How many adjustments on average do you make to the Department of Corrections and the Department of Public Safety on a yearly basis? On average, how many adjustments?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, I don't believe there are any forecasted programs for the Department of Public Safety, so the only adjustments are if the legislature makes a change in their appropriation level. In the Corrections Department, we forecast bed impact for the basically the biennium that the out, what we call the out biennium right now, it's 12 and 13. and every year we make a forecast, we readjust the forecast in November for that time. Some years it's gone up, other years it's gone down. But we do that, we make that adjustment every year.
Representative Smith?
So you make one adjustment per year for those two agencies that I suggested?
We make one adjustment for corrections. I don't believe there's any forecast adjustments made to the Department of Public Safety.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Smith.
So, Mr. King, you're telling me right now that over the last year you made no adjustments to the Department of Public Safety, and you made one to the Department of Corrections.
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, there are certainly budget adjustments that we, recommend. The governor recommends to the legislature. You take action. You pass your bills. There's no additional forecast changes except for the Department of Corrections.
Representative Smith,
that's all for now. Thank you.
Mr. Carter, did you want to add to that?
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are also the corrections. I think is one of only three programs that has a forecast change where they forecast the program. The other is K-12 education and the Department of Human Services. But there also is, at the end of the year, if money is unspent in the general fund, it can cancel. And that's maybe what you're getting at. It will cancel to the general fund. And Mr. King can correct me if I'm wrong on that. But to complicate matters a little more, there's been legislation passed that allows them to carry forward some of the money unspent to the next biennium, maybe for, I think a couple of years ago it was for technology. So if that clarifies anything. Mr. King, am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Mr. King. Okay, are there any questions for Mr. King? Thank you. Mr. King, I'm sorry, one more question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hillstrom.
Mr. King, it actually was right along the lines of Mr. Carter's comments. So in the event that the legislature decided we didn't want you to do a base adjustment based on forecast in the Department of Corrections, we wanted them to keep it and maybe put it in treatment or something along those lines. That has been done in other areas of the budget, and that would not be inappropriate in terms of the pattern of other areas.
Mr. King?
Mr. Chairman, you can certainly put anything in the legislation you want, and we would do our best to uphold that in our budget.
All right. Thank
you. So to follow, would that be language, rider language in the finance bill that could dictate that any additional monies would carry forward and be used for a specific purpose? We can do that.
Mr. Chairman, you could certainly do that. Mr.
Chair, we can do that. In fact, we have done that in the past. The last example, if I remember right, is the cameras for squad cars, where it was a three-year program. So we carry forward part of that money into the next biennium for 1 year, which we later took during the last budget crisis.
Thank you, Mr. King. Ms. Cornelius, do you want to tell us about the governor's recommendations?
Mr. Chair, since Mr. Carter went over each of the numbers for the cuts in our agency, I'm just going to make a couple quick comments. We have a very large and complex agency, so we scoured all of our unencumbered funds, and we actually did a lot of historical glancing at our cancellations every year, and cancellations are money that did not get spent at the end of each year. Overall, our cut is about 1.2% of our budget. That excludes federal funds or offender money. But I'm just going to let each of the deputy commissioners just get right into their areas and talk about these cuts.
Very good. Who's first? Representative Hillstrom, did you have a question first?
Mr. Chair, it's just kind of a general question. Last year this committee didn't want to cut or didn't put a cut but I'm just going to use the dental care as an example. We didn't want the department to do that, so we didn't put it in our budget, and then it was done. So in the event we didn't want something like that to happen in general, would we actually have to put language in saying that you may not cut that? Or I'm just trying to get a general sense, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Cornelius, do you have an answer to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the more specific language that we get that says we cannot do things, the more difficult it is for us to manage budget cuts. There was a significant piece of rider language last year dictating what we could not cut. And when you get budget reductions and there's very specific positions that cannot be touched, it really truly limits our ability to make those cuts. And so we had to make the cuts where we thought there would be no impact on public safety and still follow the rider language. So it makes it very difficult for us if there is specific language.
Well, I'll follow up to that. If the legislature, which has oversight over the Department of Corrections, felt that that dental program, for instance, would say it would ultimately save the Department of Corrections money by getting a problematic dental dental problems early on and asked you not to do it, and then you do it anyway, do we need to be more specific then? I mean, it's not like we didn't discuss this issue. I mean, otherwise, we might as well just say, you know, why are we even here? We might as well just say, why should we even hear your budget if that's your position?
Mr. Chair, my name is David Kust. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Facilities Division, and let me take a shot at that one. I think we learned something last year in the legislative session. We heard certainly the things that was in the rider language, and I think the reaction that we are getting to the cuts that we made, particularly in the dental area, are a lesson for us. I think going forward, it's certainly clear when things are in legislation, but going forward, I hope that we can have more conversation about issues like that and come to some real understanding beyond what's presented in the hearing. So that's what we would endeavor to do. If we're at all confused about anything, we'll come and ask.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay. Ms. Cornelius, did you want to get into specifics here, Ms. Commissioner Bray, or?
Mr. Chair, representatives, I think I'll start. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of Community Services, and I think this is one of the most controversial reductions. If I may, could I give you just a brief overview of the sentencing to service program so that there's just a common understanding and you can begin to ferret out the implications?
Please do. That would be helpful.
Thank you. I have to start by saying sentencing to service is one of the more successful programs and collaborations between the Department of Corrections, courts, local units of government, sheriffs, and community corrections. It was established in 1986 by the Department of Corrections with foundation funding, and we worked very closely in the beginning, and we still do, with the Department of Natural Resources. So originally, the Department of Corrections designed and developed the program to assist counties with overcrowding in their jails, because that was a big issue at the time. The way the program is structured is offenders at the local level, county probation offenders who were doing jail time, are doing jail time, would be able to reduce their jail days by working in the community in a crew under the leadership of a trained crew leader. And that's the way the program works to this day. Some of the community projects sentencing to service crews work on are litter pickup, river cleanup, trail development, flood control, storm damage cleanup, working with nonprofits, et cetera, to do real intensive labor that otherwise couldn't be done. This program has really met its goal and gone way beyond, I would say, in terms of the goodwill that it provides in the community, and the fact that so many agencies are so very proud of this program. So why is it on the list to be eliminated? Well, this under these economic times, we feel much like I know you're going to feel, these difficult decisions have to be made, and this is one of them. Our criteria, our priority in looking at what we have to reduce, we'd like it to be preserving services to the highest risk offenders. And that means the offenders under the authority of the Commissioner of Corrections and in the community under supervision. STS offenders are by definition low risk, nonviolent offenders. I should say one of the other criterias we used was trying not to touch the pass-through money that goes to the county. And I say that because STS, as I said, it's collaboration between the Department of Corrections and the counties. STS offenders are not committed to the Commissioner of Corrections. They're county offenders with sentencing to service as a condition of their local probation. The bed savings are to the local jails. They're not to the prisons. As I mentioned...
What was the... Did someone have a question? Okay, I'm sorry, Ms.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives. I mentioned before, at the time the program was started, it was to reduce overcrowding in the jails, and things have really changed right now with the construction of new jails and the expansion of existing jails. So there is no longer overcrowding in the jails. In fact, jails are under capacity. Funding for the STS crews is typically 50-50. It's 50% of state funding and 50% of county funding. So if it's a state program, then it's staffed by state-employed crew leaders. The county reimburses the department for 50% of the cost. If it's a county problem, then it's staffed by county-employed crew leaders, and the department reimburses the counties for 50% of the cost. Elimination of this program will save about a little over $3 million annually. And I just need to reiterate that the department is very proud of the program, did not make this decision lightly. We're not throwing it up because we don't think you'll take it. We felt like we were being very responsible in doing this, and we would be very sad if it were eliminated.
I appreciate that, Commissioner, and I think it's a program that's had wide support over the years here, so we'll have to take a good look at it, because it's one of those things, too, that if we don't fund it, it looks like, not that it's a mandate for counties, but we're pushing more programs off on the county to fund, and I guess they can decide not to use the program also. So, questions on this? Someone has their cell phone on. Please turn it off. It's good getting some feedback here. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is more a comment than a question. I don't like the direction we're going here because, quite frankly, Pendleton County and my rural counties, citizens in general feel that STS is one of the best things they've got going for them. And then you start coming from the state level, eliminating that. At the same time, you come from a different program, cutting local government aid and some other programs that go to the counties. Just what are we doing? Are we just telling the senior citizens of the world who do get a lot of help in STS too that, hey, we don't care about you people, just forget you, because the counties can't fund these things when you're cutting their money everywhere else. This is just not a realistic plan.
Anything else, Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, representatives, one other thing about the remaining $160,000. what we're doing is looking in our budget to find where we're going to get that. We have a small amount of reentry money that we were planning to spend in the community when we knew what was going to happen with the budget. We've just been holding on to it, but it's not a big amount. We are looking at laying off one person, and for the rest of it, we'll just look for unencumbered funds and take them where we can, and that'll be the remaining $160,000. I just want to reiterate again, a little bit in deference to Representative Olin, we really have stayed away from that pass-through money because that also goes to counties and it goes for higher-risk offenders.
Representative Olin. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you give us a sense of how many people actually go through the STS program and maybe the cost effectiveness of that approach versus other kinds of incarceration?
Mr. Gray.
Chair Paymore, Representative Eastland. Approximately 19,000 offenders go through that program in a year, depending. The offenders offender hours worked equals about 900,000 roughly per year. In a year we save about 48,000 jail days, and if you estimate that at $55 per day, it's about $2.6 million saved in jail days. If you estimate the value of the work done on the projects, it's about $9 million a year. And if you estimate the labor costs of the offenders who do not get paid, but if you estimated their labor at $6 an hour, it's about $5.7 million.
Representative Eastland.
Who are the beneficiaries of the labor? Who benefits from the $9 million? Is there any recovering of fees or those dollars into corrections because they're actually providing some work for someone?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, by and large, the benefits are to communities, and because the work that's done is work that otherwise would most likely not get done. So, for example, cleaning up rivers and trails and doing some work for nonprofit agencies at, say, senior public housing, it's work that wouldn't get done otherwise. And so that's how we estimate the value. The offenders don't get paid. The money comes from the counties and the state general fund. So there isn't nobody's collecting any reimbursement. The offenders are oftentimes paying off their fines because they wouldn't be able to do it any other way. And they do not have to spend as much time in jail. I think for every 2 days they work, they may get 1 day reduced of jail time.
Anything else, Commissioner?
No.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, we're jumping around the list here a little bit. Ms. Bray just addressed the STS subsidy and the community services reductions. I'm going to jump in with offender education and MNCOR, and then Ms. Cornelius will finish up with the operating budget reduction and the special revenue fund issues. In offender education, one of the first things that we're going to endeavor there is to achieve some efficiencies by consolidating some positions in our juvenile education program without changing the actual delivery of the juvenile program. The move that's contemplated here is to eliminate a couple of school principal positions and put those schools under the director of juvenile education. So we can do that without actually changing the number of hours that students spend in the classroom, the amount of coursework that's being presented to them. It's more of a reform on the administrative level than it is on the program delivery level. We're also going to look at, evaluate, and perhaps reduce underutilized vocational programs. And I don't want to name programs here that we're looking at because that causes concern in those teachers, and we really haven't made decisions in those areas yet. But we do have some programs where maybe only a portion of the available seats in the classroom are filled with students. And we want to take a look at that and see if that's a way to spend the state dollars right now. We would also seek opportunities to eliminate positions as vacancies occur. There are resignations that happen. There's retirements that happen. Some of those things you don't want to bank on somebody retiring. That's not fair to the person that maybe hasn't made a decision yet. And so we hold these things in reserve until we find out what the budget numbers are going to be and see what our options are going to be and then move forward with those. But whatever we do, one of our goals here is going to be to minimize idleness in our facilities. We've got to keep offenders constructively occupied as much as we possibly can. Nowhere is it more true about idleness being the devil's workshop, I think, than in our prisons. And so we're very aware of that, and we do want to keep these guys as busy as we can, as much of the time as we can. One of the things that was mentioned in the governor's budget was a reference maybe to reducing library hours. That was an idea we were kicking around early on. It might still be an option, but it's dropped to way to the bottom of any list that we're contemplating at this point. So I would stand for questions about education at this point, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious about what you say about reducing the principals in the program. And I appreciate that, you know, to keeping, it's, you know, good to keep the education program going and keep the service available to students. But I'm just curious, what are those two principals providing that's going to be lost? I mean, the way you described it almost made it sound like it wouldn't make any difference. And surely that can't be true. I'd like to know a little bit more about what service, what value we're actually losing by cutting those two positions.
Commissioner Crist.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, the two juvenile programs are supervised by licensed principals. The director of juvenile education is also a licensed principal. So the administrative services that are provided, we think, can be picked up by that person. The loss I think we would suffer would be the on-site supervision of teachers, and that would be replaced. The director of juvenile services would spend time in both facilities and split her time in both facilities. Obviously, we wouldn't have as much on-site supervision of what's going on. That would have to be picked up by program directors or associate wardens or people of those classifications in our facilities. We think it's doable without reducing the end product to the students.
Okay, we're gonna adjourn in about 5 minutes, and we'll have the department back here next week. Representative Coles,
Mr. Chair, I just want to, you know, and I think this is the type of change that we need to be looking for, not just within corrections, but across state agencies. And I applaud the department for getting here. Obviously, if we can have on-site oversight of teachers, that's a good thing. But we need to be looking for efficiencies wherever we can. And if we're not inhibiting the actual delivery of service to the juveniles in our system, I think that's that's a good thing. My only comment is, you know, it's unfortunate that it takes. If we can do this now, we could have done it before. And it's unfortunate that it takes a budget situation like this to ensure that state agencies are operating as efficiently as they possibly can, because it's not our money. It's not their money. It's the taxpayers' money, and we need to always remember that. And so I think this is probably a good change. I need to know more about it. I don't know enough about it, but I only note that it's unfortunate that if it's good now, we could have done it 2 years ago or 4 years ago, and if we're not affecting the service that we're delivering to kids, I guess I just... it's too bad it takes a budget crisis for us to get here.
Ms. Cornelius, did you want to respond to that?
I do. Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, our agency actually is quite proud of a lot of the efficiencies we've done over the last 10 years because we have centralized and regionalized, especially on the administrative side. We value programming in our agency. It's very, very important to us. And so we have been looking at this educational piece for quite some time. But like Representative Liebling says, you are losing some value when you do this. And so, I just want to say we really have worked hard to try to be efficient. And, we have half the number of supervisors on our administrative side probably than we did 10 years ago. So I appreciate Representative Cole's comments.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final statement by me and a request for information, because I will not be here the next time you take up the department's budget, so you get quite a pass from me on this budget cycle. Sorry?
I said so to speak.
Yeah. So I appreciate the budget proposal that you brought forward and budget cuts. Last session, when we were talking about cutting the budget, when it was not part of the governor's proposal, it resulted in this is how many guards you're going to lay off. This is how many prisoners you're not going to be able to incarcerate. So I would like a spreadsheet or a summary or one pager or something really telling me who are you laying off and if it has any guard implications or bed. We can't incarcerate somebody, because I only think it's fair that when we propose a budget cut and we get a nasty little letter, that when the governor proposes a budget cut, we really know the numbers as well. And that's all I have, Mr. Chair.
No, I think that's a good idea. Recommendation, Representative Hillstrom, I was just talking to Mr. Carger. I think it would be helpful for the start of the next hearing. Everything that we had in the bill for you to update us, what's happened, the car fleets, we had a lot of recommendations, and just let us know, where things are at. So we only have a couple of minutes left. Do you want to say anything else, or should we wait until next Tuesday?
Mr. Chair, I could take a stab at doing MnCorp quickly if you want, or we can wait on that one.
Let's wait on that. That seems like a bigger topic that we should discuss. And Representative Hillstrom, good luck on, you won't be here next week, good luck on you taking the bar?
Taking the bar, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, good. We wish you well. Thank you, commissioners, for your testimony. We'll see you next week. This meeting's adjourned.